Welcome to the ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, where we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. And now, here are your hosts, Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt.
Hello, I'm Dr. Dana Day.
And I am Dr. Susan Schmidt, and welcome to the ABHA Listen and Learn Podcast, hosted by Arizona Balance and Hearing. This is where we discuss all the latest and all the greatest advances in testing and treatment of all hearing and balance issues.
Education is at the heart of our core values at ABHA, one Dr. Schmidt and I take very seriously, the education of both ourselves and mostly of our patients. That is why we are here today.
And to that end, if anyone who is listening has any specific questions you would like answered on this podcast, please go to questions@arizonabalance.com. Again, that's questions@arizonabalance.com, and we will be sure to answer them in one of our upcoming podcasts. Also, don't forget to click subscribe so you don't miss any of our future episodes.
So we were just mentioning that you took a little vacation with your kids over spring break.
Mm-hmm.
Did some skiing.
I did.
But you did something a little different.
Yes. So I've skied my whole life, and my daughter decided she wanted to try snowboarding, so I didn't want to leave her by herself, so I decided to try along with her. So we get to the mountain, we get the boards, we don't really know how to put them on. It's not the same as skiing. So we were just, you know, following people with boards, and we were watching them, and we figured out how to put them on. And then we decided to go down the bunny hill ourselves before our official lesson. That's not a good idea. because, you know, as soon as you try to stand up on this board, you will come crashing down and violently, even though you're not moving. It's the craziest thing ever. And then we took the lesson, and the instructor's like, hey, it takes more time to learn how to snowboard than ski, but once you get it, you get better snowboarding quicker than you do skiing. And I'm like, well, okay. He goes, but be prepared. It's going to be painful, and you're going to get very frustrated. So I was like, okay. So we took the ski school, and my daughter did brilliantly, and I struggled. Got beat up pretty bad.
Oh, yeah. Well, kudos to you for going with your daughter. I don't think I would have done that. I think I would have just said, okay, go to school, figure it out. I'll see you at the end.
Yes. Honestly, I think the best way to learn how to ski, or probably snowboard, I'm not sure, is just to just skip the bunny hill, just go up to the Black Diamond and figure it out.
Oh,
that's how I learned how to ski.
Oh,
and so
really?
That was pretty effective. And so maybe I should have done that with the board as well. So for all of you in Arizona, yes, there still is skiing, you know, up until the point where, you know, all the snow melts out. So,
yes.
So we're good.
Great.
Yeah.
So you had some good snow.
We did. It was a little slushy, mm-hmm. but it was pretty decent. It continues to snow here up in the mountains.
Great.
For a while. Yeah.
Great. Super.
Yeah. So that brings us to today's topic, and what we're going to talk about today are some frequently asked questions. So, you know, Dana, you and I have been doing this forever, it seems like, right? And so over the years, we have had these recurring questions that come up to us when we see our patients. And
right.
So we thought it would be very interesting and worthwhile to devote this whole podcast to some of those questions that we get on a regular basis. We think, you know, that getting the most information that you can before proceeding with anything is probably a good idea. Okay. Just like I had some work done in my eyes, I would have loved to have a podcast or a blog or something that gave me all these frequently asked questions so I could make a better informed decision. So I think that this is going to be quite informative and useful for a lot of people.
Yes, I think so too. And you're right, we get a lot of questions. We get questions prior to appointments. We have questions that come to us through our chats. And so I think what's really good is people are looking at their hearing and balance healthcare, and they're saying, I want to be more involved. But to be more involved, I need these questions answered. Or I've heard this from a friend. Is this the case? And, you know, when we do our telehealth calls for history, you and I both have heard these. Well, this is what my neighbor said, or every person I talk to says this. I think this is really good to answer those questions, because it's very good to be an educated consumer of your healthcare and participate in your healthcare. So, right. So we'll go ahead and get started.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the questions that pops up over and over again is, are hearing aids at Costco or Sam's Club or a big box store, is that a good place to get our hearing aids? And my response to that would be, I don't know that I want to get my hearing health care at the same place I can get a 5-gallon jug of mayonnaise. So I think that as a consumer of all products, you have to look at what is out there, what is available, and what the cost of everything is. And I don't mean the bottom line cost. The cost of getting your treatment at a big box store can have adverse effects. And one of those is, studies have shown that people that get their hearing technology through a big box store, whether it be a Sam's Club, a Costco, there might be other ones out there, nearly 80%, I think it's 83%, do not return there for their second pair. Well, you have to ask yourself, why? Why is that the case? If cost is the only factor, why would that be the case? Because I think when we first fit, or we first decide we need hearing technology, the cost, we can have sticker shock. Kind of like filling your car up with gas right now, right?
Yes.
So there's that sticker shock. So I'm going to go look for the cheapest one out there, and I'm going to go wherever that is. But we forget that it's not the widget. It's not that thing you put on your ear. Right, exactly. Get what you paid for, as Robin says. It's not that part that makes the experience and the fitting worthwhile. It's that person behind it. So what I would say to those is, if cost is your only factor and you really, the experience of hearing better, hearing your family better, being able to engage more is really not a factor, then perhaps you want to look at a big box store. But my recommendation would be to look at what else is out there, because I believe you will be one of the 83-84% that don't go back the second time, and there's a reason for that. And I would say to those out there listening is, really understand what is behind the technology and the fitting of that technology.
Right. So I see hearing evaluations that come from these places.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when I see them now, 9 times out of 10, unfortunately, the actual evaluation is not correct.
Okay. Well, that's a problem right there to begin with.
That is a problem. Mm-hmm. I'm very hopeful every time I see one. But then when I look at it, There's certain things that an audiologist knows. We know how the brain works. We know how the ears work together. And so there's a reason why we have a doctorate in our field. Mm-hmm. Okay. We have a lot of education to support what we do.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, we're not even talking about the treatment of it. We're just talking about the evaluation. And so when I look at these, evaluations, first of all, they're not complete. Okay. So they do parts of different tests, but they don't do the full evaluation, which does not tell them fully about what the brain is doing and how it's processing, first of all. But even the part that they do, there's just certain little things that an audiologist will know that a technician will not realize. So if you're testing one ear, the other ear is going to participate at some point. And at what point? Well, an audiologist will know that.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a technician will not. And so you'll get some interference and the results will be invalid. So
right.
If you have, first of all, invalid results, then, you know, the treatment obviously is not going to be appropriate mm-hmm. as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I do agree with you that when we think about the treatment of the hearing loss, what an audiologist does, we look at the brain and how the brain processes. Okay, we're just not looking at, okay, let's put some sound in the ear.
Right,
okay?
Right.
So the difference there is pretty vast. So if you're thinking about the Costco or the Sam's Club, you are going to get something that puts sound in your ears. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is that helpful to your brain? You know, does that help you communicate better? Does that help your brain process things more smoothly? That's what we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what places like this don't follow up on
right.
as well. Okay.
Right.
So if you, for example, if you go, you know, if you have some vision issues and you get some glasses, that's great. But then if you don't get follow-up testing to say, hey, are these glasses actually working? You know,
uh-huh.
Can I see better? Are things clearer? You know, that's needed. But if you go to a place like this, they don't follow up. They don't do that follow-up testing mm-hmm. to say, hey, is this actually helping you, you know, communicate better? Can we see what the brain is doing? Are you having more difficulty in certain situations? They don't do that.
Right.
So it's the experience and the knowledge behind the widget. The widget, the hearing device is just a device.
Okay? Exactly.
So you just have to realize when you're spending your hard-earned money to treat, you know, your hearing loss, which is very important, you want to be very cognizant of how you're treating it and who you're working with, and is this the best option for me?
Correct. I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And the other thing to keep in mind when you, whether it be a big box store or you order instruments mm-hmm. online or some of the manufacturer stores out there, mm-hmm. whatever they're called, they can be called all different things, but they advertise that they've got top level brand name hearing aids. And what they have is a manufacturer has agreed to manufacture a hearing aid for them, and then they put their label on it. And normally, most likely, that technology is a platform behind. So it's not, it is a brand name manufacturer in a label,
mm-hmm.
but the technology is not their newest technology. And then the other thing that they do, and this from our perspective can be incredibly frustrating, is they lock their hearing aids. And what that means is that if you purchased a device either online or through one of the big box store or one of these manufacturer stores, and it wasn't working, or you were vacationing in Arizona and something went wrong with your hearing device, and you came to our office and you said, can you fix this? We can't. We can't change anything, because locked means that when we try to connect it to our software to make those adjustments, it will say it cannot connect. You have to go back to those locations. So again, if someone comes to us and they have a test done and we complete the test and we say, okay, now take these test results back to where you were fit and have them make these adjustments, because we can't make them. We get this, well, they can't get me in, or it's not part of my dispensing. They don't do that. They tried to make the adjustments, but it didn't work, or whatever the case may be. So it really ties our hands in trying to offer the best service to our patients that come in our door. So keep that in mind, because we've had people that are here from out of state. Maybe they're here 6 months out of the year and their hearing aids don't work, and there's nothing we can do about it. And there might be one other store in the whole state of Arizona, and they have to go there to get their hearing aids reprogrammed or fixed or worked on or whatever the case may be. So think, versus if you were to purchase hearing devices with an audiologist in a freestanding clinic, those are open platforms. So our patients that do live here 6 months out of a year and maybe live somewhere else, very easily can go back and forth between practices and have their hearing health care taken taken care of, if you will, no matter where they're at. We have patients that even spend time out of the country, and we're able to provide them with services as well, because we usually can find a place in that country, or if we can't, we work with a manufacturer to do telehealth programming, which is available now, which I don't believe is available through the big box stores, but I can't say that for a fact, but I assume it is not. So these are things that you really need to think about, because it is an investment. I am not going to sit here and say, hey, it's no big deal. Go out and drop thousands of dollars. It is. It's sticker shock. It is an investment. And those of us in the field that really want to provide a service and a product that gives the most benefit to our patients, we will find ways, either through subscription plans, lease to purchase, care credit, all these different things. They're available out there in most independent practices, and they certainly are at ABHA. So we do encourage you to really think about what kind of hearing health care you want to have, because this is it is a major purchase. Even if it's at a Costco or a Sam's Club, it's still going to be a lot of money. Is it going to do what you need it to do for you?
Right. So this is by far, it seems like, our number one question that we get throughout the years. So so we wanted to highlight that question especially. So again, just, you know, it's from an audiologist's perspective, what you're purchasing is the knowledge and the brain healthcare that we provide. Okay. Not really the device as much. The device is part of it, but it is the background and the knowledge and how the brain works and to get you the best results possible.
Yeah.
That's absolutely what you're purchasing. Okay. Which brings us to the next question. How do I know what brand hearing device is right for me? Okay, so we get this one pretty often as well. This is a tough question because there are a handful of manufacturers out there in the market that are treating the brain very well. So all the major manufacturers seem to have all the necessary software in order for the brain to work with the device well. Okay, so in reality, the manufacturer will be chosen, should be chosen, by your audiologist based on your type of hearing loss, how severe your hearing loss is. Those are the number one factors of why we choose what we choose. Then there's other things that we can consider, like connectivity to phones, other devices, other things that are important to you. If you're techie, if you're not, those are, less important things. But first and foremost, we want to say, okay, hey, so this is your hearing loss. We think this would best fit what your brain needs. And then based on that, then we'll give you that manufacturer, and then think about all the little details that are important to some people as well.
Yes, so, totally agree.
Yeah.
We call them the big six. There's six large manufacturers out there. And if you go with their premium level product, you've got a great device. Mm-hmm. But you can have a great device and not know how to program it. So that's where the audiologist comes in, and that their knowledge of it. And there might be things that you don't even consider that we look at, dexterity and processing speed and all these different things that we're looking at to make sure that when we put something on you, that it is the best for your particular hearing loss, for your particular setting and situation. Mm-hmm. And because of the strong correlation between hearing loss and dementia, or the risk of developing dementia, we want to make sure that we do everything possible to keep that brain healthy in whatever way we can. And so it might not just be the device. And everybody thinks it's just that widget, that thing that we put on the ear. And that is not the case. Mm-hmm. I had a gentleman the other day that came in and got his devices someplace else. And I did additional testing on him and realized that in a noisy situation, they were not helping him at all. And when I brought it up, he literally started tearing up because these are all situations he cannot be involved in anymore. And so adding a remote mic so that he can engage in these activities. Again, another widget. It's not the widget. It's the person behind that's programming the widget that knows. And that's what you really need to look at. How can we make your life in the auditory and hearing world, because we live in a hearing world, how can we make that better for you?
Right.
Yeah. And the follow-up care. So, every now and then I have to get a new prescription, and I put on my glasses, and for about maybe, if it's a new prescription, maybe the first half day, I'm seeing funny. And then my brain adjusts, and then I get used to it, and I go on my way, and everything's all well and good. The brain doesn't adjust that fast to the input of hearing, because I believe that it is because hearing loss is a slow, progressive process, and we normally wait up to 7 years before we seek care to treat our hearing loss. So the brain has kind of adapted and gotten used to this way that they hear sounds. And so when we, unlike glasses, if I can't read the newspaper, or I can't see the stop sign, or I, can't read my grocery list, we put readers on, and that helps it. And then we go up to, okay, well, that doesn't help anymore, so now I'm going to go get glasses, right? But it's never 7 years. Nobody waits 7 years for that, right? So the follow-up care is so important here because we don't set, normally we do not set a hearing aid at full prescription, because if we did that, it would be auditory overload and our patients would say, everything is too loud, I can't tolerate this, I hate these, because now you're taking a, you know, 7 to 10 years of slow decline and you're saying, okay, we're going to put it all back in 7 to 10 minutes, right? And it's going to be way too much. So that follow-up care, that coming back, you know, changing it, readjusting it, making sure that the brain is adapting to the sound is so important. And again, the you need to look at that as a package.
Right.
If you're not getting that, then, and you're not successful with your widget, then perhaps the additional cost is that time with the audiologist. That is, at least in our clinic, for 4 years, is part of the warranty. Mm-hmm. So if there's a problem, if your hearing changes and you need it reprogrammed, are they going to do that for you? Or do you have to get all new hearing aids? Just like if your prescription changes, you have to get new lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not necessarily. Hearing aids can be reprogrammed. A good fitting hearing aid or widget by an audiologist will be fit to allow for reprogramming.
Definitely. Yes. Yeah. And so if you don't have that, it's just saying it again, it's not a one and done thing. It's mm-mm. not a, you show up, put these things on and you go on your merry way.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
Hearing loss for the most part is a neural problem. So it is, it's not peripheral. You can't just, you know, put a little Band-Aid on it usually and just, you know, have it work fine. No, your brain has to adapt to it. Mm-hmm. It has to learn the new input. It has to be able to and willing to change its processing so that it gives you better, smoother, easier communication.
Yes, absolutely.
So
another question that we get a lot is, so we do the hearing evaluation, we go over all the results, and someone has a mild hearing loss, and they'll say, I just have a mild hearing loss. I shouldn't have to worry about it. I think I'll just wait.
Mm-hmm.
Is that okay? No. And I'll tell you why. Research now has told us, and this has been since 2011, and it just continues to accumulate over the years, that even a mild hearing loss increases your risk of dementia by 200%. 200% for a mild hearing loss. So, and that is out of the Johns Hopkins research study as well as the research internationally with Lancet. So it's been out there. It's the number one modifiable risk factor for dementia is treating mm-hmm. your hearing loss, even a mild hearing loss. But recently, Dr. Anoush Sharma and Hannah Glick, out of University of Colorado Boulder, brought out some research that's also just kind of speaks to this same point. And that is, through EEGs and functional MRIs, they were able to measure the area of the brain that fires when they hear auditory information, visual stimulus, and somatosensory, what you feel and touch, that type of thing. And what they found is modal cross correlation. And what does that mean? It means that in the brain, different areas light up auditorily, visually, and somatosensory, and it's kind of equal. But when we start to lose our hearing, that real estate, if you will, in the brain isn't mm-hmm. getting the input that it should get. And so it begins to, like, kind of be lazy and go to sleep. Well, because you don't hear as well, you're going to rely more on your vision and somatosensory. And so those areas of the brain begin to increase mm-hmm. while your hearing decreases. But there's only so much that vision can help overcome a hearing loss. We, no matter how good you think you are at reading lips, you're not that good. There will, and especially during a pandemic when masks go on, right? But their research has shown that they took age-related hearing loss, mild hearing loss with age-related, and they fit them properly with premium technology. And what they found in 6 months is that area that had been overtaken by the visual and somatosensory component was now back and responding to those auditory signals. Mm-hmm. So the brain needs that information. It needs that information to stay whole, if you will, to avoid that atrophy or shrinkage of the brain. And it's a great study. They're now doing a more longitudinal one. Dr. Lim out of Johns Hopkins is set to publish his longitudinal study on this as well, hopefully in 2022. But it's great information. And for us, it's just saying the thing that we knew all along is that your brain has to be stimulated and it has to pick up those signals, has to recognize the difference between an S and an F. So S is in Sam versus F is in Frank.
Right.
And it needs all of those sounds, not just the vowels and not just this. And also when you do a mild hearing loss, when you get into noise, you don't have a mild hearing loss anymore. Now you have a moderate hearing loss because that noise is competing and your brain just can't process and separate the noise from the speech. So my response is yes, you do need to treat it. And studies have shown us that that is the case. We do at ABHA a cognitive screening, and we had a patient that did her cognitive screening and didn't do so well, and so decided, again, mild hearing loss, decided to treat. And then at the end of her 3-month trial, we repeated her cognitive screen and everything came back into the normal range. So, and she had noticed it too. And so she's excited, we're excited, doing backflips. This is what we know to be fact. And so, yes, you do need to treat those.
Right. And, you know, you go to us or somebody else for a hearing test because you know that something has changed.
Oh, right? Yeah.
So, you know, you don't go, oh, I'm just going to go check my hearing for no reason. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in your life, you're noticing, you know what, you know, I don't think that I'm hearing my best in this situation, or hey, I'm saying, you know, what more? Can you say that again? So you know that something's wrong, even before you come to us. Mm-hmm. That's why you're there, okay? So you come to us and you know something wrong, and that thing that's wrong is your brain is reorganizing itself, and you don't want that. I mean, our brains are built in the way that they're built because that is the best way of everything to be processed correctly, okay? So as soon as your brain starts to reorganize, that's not an ideal situation.
Right.
Okay, so this is a great way to keep everything where it should be, all those processing factors where they should be and not, you know, increase in one area and decrease in another area,
mm-hmm.
as you said before.
Absolutely.
Yes. So another question that we get a lot is, what do I look for in a hearing healthcare professional? Okay, so we're just going to give it to you. Okay, so you want somebody who will do all the hearing and brain testing, all of it. All of it is important. Okay, so this would include the basic audiogram, which is responding to those beeps. Okay, that's been around forever. Everybody does that one. That's fine. Okay, but there's more. Okay, you also need somebody to do some speech understanding testing in quiet and in noise. Okay?
Yes, the noise is very important.
Yes. So a lot of people, when you're testing, do fine and quiet, but you put a little bit of noise in there and that processing signal to the brain, it just gets a lot of interference with that speech signal. And then we find that these people really struggle in noise. So speech testing in quiet and in noise is very important. Okay. Also, what we should do, everybody should be doing, is what we call tympanometry or reflex testing. Those two different tests, but essentially we're testing the peripheral system. So we're testing the eardrum, three little bones going into the inner ear. That's what we're testing for the most part. So we want to see, is there any blockage to that sound entering the inner part of the ear? Okay, so If that is the case, then that would be more of a medical issue that might be able to be corrected. So you want to rule out any medical issues that could interfere with the hearing, okay? Because then the treatment obviously would be different, okay? So that is a really important test. Also, what we call otoacoustic emissions, or OAEs, super important. These are these little inner ear sensory cells, and these are the cells that pick up the sound and change the sound or change the activity to electrical and send it to the brain. If you don't have these little sensory cells, you can't hear.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people do not use this test, and I don't know why. It is super important to know if these little sensory cells are there, first of all, and how well they're responding, okay? Because then we know, is the information getting up to the brain? Is it struggling to get up to the brain? Is there not full information that goes up to the brain? So this comes into play when people come to us and they're like, hey, I don't feel like I'm hearing very well, but I've had a gazillion hearing tests in the past and everybody says I'm fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But nobody can find a problem, but I feel like I have a problem. It's because they haven't had this test,
right,
likely. Okay. So then we do this test, and even though for the beeps they say, oh yeah, everything is good, but we know that their inner ear sensory cells from this test are impaired.
Mm-hmm.
Not present or impaired. And so then we know, okay, this is what's going on, and now this is how we can help you,
right,
going forward. So that is a really important test to have, to find out, hey, is the information actually getting relayed to the brain correctly? So if you go to a hearing healthcare professional and they do all of these tests, then you should be pretty confident that, hey, yes, I'm testing my whole system and we know exactly what's going on.
Right. And I echo the OAEs is so important. And the other area that Dr. Schmidt touched on, but I want to just emphasize, is the reflex testing.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, people don't believe that's as important anymore. And it is so crucial, especially in the case of what we call hidden hearing loss, which Dr. Schmidt just referred to. Your peripheral testing, your perception of those sounds is within the normal limits. But when we do the OAEs, we show that it's not getting that sound up the way it's supposed to. The acoustic reflexes will also tell you that. In fact, it's it's a wealth of information because there's an ipsilateral, meaning up the ipsilateral pathway, and contralateral. Mm-hmm. So again, if they're doing those tests, that's, then you can feel confident in that. And not just doing that, those tests, but understanding them. If they're doing them, they understand what they're for. And then once you get treatment, then one of the things that should always come to play is called real ear measurements. This is standard of care for excellence in audiology. So real ear measurements or verification is, we're going to insert a little microphone at the tip of your hearing aid, and we're going to make sure that the sound getting into the ear canal and up against the eardrum is what we want and where it is, where we need it to be. And this is crucial, because just because we have it programmed does not necessarily mean that that's the best fit, because once you get the hearing aid in the ear, everybody's canal is different. I have one that's straight and one that's crooked. So are we getting the hearing, the sound into the ear the way it needs to be? Mm-hmm. Are we over amplifying it? Are we under amplifying it? So it's incredibly important. So if they're not doing real ear measurements, then you need to be very concerned with your provider. And at ABHA or Arizona Balance, this is something we do routinely on every patient. We usually don't do it on the first visit because, again, back to, we don't go full prescription on the first visit, but we always do it either the second or third when they're getting towards full prescription. Or if they come in even 3 or 4 months later and say, this isn't sounding right, something's wrong, we might do it then to see, is there something that has changed? But I think the takeaway is everybody is unique. Every person that is in front of me is unique. And if I treated everyone the same in a cookie cutter manner, we would run into a lot of problems. So you need to be comfortable with your provider, and that provider needs to be comfortable understanding that what happened in their appointment just an hour before may not work in the appointment that they're in right there.
Definitely. That would make our lives much easier if that was the case. Right. But no, everybody is very specific. Your brain is very specific to you. So we need to figure out what your brain needs and actually do the testing to make sure what's getting to your brain is actually the case. So those are our most asked questions about the treatment of hearing loss. Okay, so now we're going to move on to tinnitus, or ringing in the ears. Sometimes it's not ringing. It can be a lot of sounds, a lot of internal sounds that you hear. We call tinnitus. So if tinnitus is your main concern, then you should definitely go to a professional that specializes in tinnitus. That is what they do, okay? If you don't, then you will either get the advice to just live with it, okay? Or you might be fit with a typical hearing device, but neither one of those is acceptable, okay? So if you just go in and say, hey, I'm really bothered by my tinnitus, can you help me? And you get, not really, there's nothing you can do about it. Okay, just walk out the door. It's fine. Or if you're like, okay, yeah, so all we do is we put on this little widget and this will help you. I would turn and walk away too. Okay, you really need to find somebody that has that specialty. We are difficult to find. There's not a lot of audiologists specializing in tinnitus.
Can I interrupt you real quick?
Yes.
Can you define what patient this is? So if someone says, yeah, I have tinnitus, but I've had it for years, it doesn't bother me. Mm-hmm. Are you talking about that patient?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm, no. There's millions of people out there that have tinnitus.
Right.
And they're not bothered by it usually at all during mm-hmm. their daily routine or you know, maybe they notice it here and there, but that's not the person that is going to seek treatment to help with that situation. The person that really is bothered by their tinnitus, so they wake up and it's there and it's bothering them, okay? Or they go to sleep and they're laying there looking at the ceiling because all they hear is this internal noise and they can't go to sleep. Or they're being awoken during the night. Oh, okay, what's waking me up? I think it's this noise in my head. And during the day, they're having issues because they feel like they can't hear because of this screaming noise that goes inside their head. Mm-hmm. So these are the people that are like, hey, I really need some treatment. I really need some help. This is bothering me pretty constantly throughout my life.
Okay. Yes.
Those are the people. Okay. So you don't have to passively accept it. Okay. So you'll get that answer a lot. You don't have to just accept it. There are things that we can do. Tinnitus is treatable. Okay. There is no magic cure for it currently, but it is treatable, just like other problems are treatable, just like diabetes is treatable, just like a broken leg is treatable. We need to treat it, and there is a treatment available. We just have to find the best one for each individual person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of the first things when you go to see a tinnitus specialist is they'll try to figure out what is causing this noise. You know, if you go to somebody and they don't ask questions as to find out when this noise started, what happened, what was going on in your life, then they're not going to find those answers. Mm-hmm. And those are really important. Okay. We need to figure out what is causing you to notice this noise more than your neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
With the same hearing ability and same seemingly similar lives. Why are you bothered by it? So that is the main thing that a tinnitus specialist should be following up on. Why is it bothering you? What is the reason? We need to find this, because if we don't, then we might not give the right treatment. So somebody comes in and they're like, hey, yes, I've had this treatment ever since my car accident. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I had a concussion due to the accident and it was very stressful. Okay. So this is a story I get commonly.
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we
have a mutual patient right now that when I did testing on her last week said, that just increased my tinnitus, and I said, oh, I got to tell Dr. Schmidt that.
So, you know, first of all, there was a brain injury, okay, that can cause tinnitus. Second of all, there was a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety associated with that situation, and that can make it bothersome. Okay, so we're putting all the puzzle pieces together, and we need to figure out, okay, so, you know, is it more than one thing? Usually it is more than one thing that's causing your tinnitus to be bothersome in your life. So what are those things and how do we treat them? Okay, sometimes it might be, yes, your hearing is deficient in some way. And usually when we test the tinnitus and we find out, yes, it does correspond to the hearing loss. Okay, so we do need to treat the hearing loss. Okay, and mm-hmm. so sometimes that is the case. We need to treat the hearing loss. That usually will diminish your tinnitus instantaneously
uh-huh.
for most people, which is really nice. But then also, that's not enough. Okay, there's a reason, there's another reason you're bothered by it when your twin sister with the same hearing loss is not. Okay,
uh-huh.
So there's another reason, and a lot of times it is stress or anxiety or something like that we need to target as well. Or maybe it's your lifestyle, maybe it's your diet, maybe there's a lot of different things that go into why it bothers you and not the person next to you. Okay, so to treat the tinnitus, we need to treat the whole person. not just one part of you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Hearing is important, yes, but we need to treat the whole person. And so when you're looking for that person to help you, you have to be aware that they need to be in the trenches of tinnitus on a daily basis.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Not just treating hearing loss and, oh, by the way, you have tinnitus.
Yes.
Okay. So there's that differentiation there.
So what would you say to the person that was told they fit them with the widget or hearing technology, and they were told it takes the brain about a year to a year and a half mm-hmm. to adapt? That's a long time to live with your tinnitus, if that is your primary concern.
Right, right. That in itself is a difficult situation. If I had tinnitus that was bothering me on a daily basis and somebody said, hey, here, try this out and come back in a year and see if it's better, that would be a difficult pill for me to swallow, actually. So as far as treating tinnitus, usually it's a more emergent problem than, okay, I can deal with this for another year and then, mm-hmm. you know, see what happens. I really don't think that your tinnitus is going to change just by having a little hearing device on after a year. I don't think there's going to be a magic, oh, it's been a year and my tinnitus is now getting better. Yeah. You have to do the work for the other parts that are causing the tinnitus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Most definitely.
So the hearing device may decrease the tinnitus, but if it does, like I said, it usually happens instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it doesn't take a year. Mm-hmm. So if you put something on and my tinnitus is exactly the same, I'm not hopeful that particular device is going to be helpful in immediately taking down the tinnitus, and that's what most people need or want. They need that initial, okay, I need a break. Oh, okay, there's a little bit of a break now. Now let mm-hmm. me focus on these other things that are causing the tinnitus.
Yeah. Well, great advice. And Susan is right. You need to take the time to find the potential sources of the tinnitus, and then the counseling and the treatments. There are far more than just putting a device in your ear and hoping that the tinnitus is relieved for a certain period of time. And I think there are some great stories, actual examples of some of the patients that you've treated and how you've changed their lives. And I would say let's get into that in our next episode when we continue with the FAQs, and we'll talk about a little bit more on tinnitus and a little bit on balance and maybe some auditory processing and balance therapy. So, but great conversation. I hope you all found this worthwhile and good to listen to, and hopefully we've brought something to the table that you didn't know before.
Yes. So really quickly before we leave, let me just give you a tip or a trick as far as your tinnitus, because we were just talking about that. So what you want to do if you have tinnitus that bothers you is you never want to be in a situation where it is quiet. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that is, you know, basic 101 tinnitus, to not be in a quiet situation. So one of the best things you can do is bring music into your life. Okay, so if you go home, walk in the door, it's quiet, it's going to be a habit, and you're just going to turn on some music. Whatever music you love, just turn it on. Don't turn on the TV, turn on music. Okay, mm-hmm. If you're bothered by it when you go to sleep, turn on some music. Okay, music will activate your brain. It will decrease your noticeableness of the tinnitus, and it hopefully will help you relax and unwind as well.
Great tip. Yes, keep in mind, music fires the entire brain. Mm-hmm. Fires the entire brain. Great.
Yes.
So we're going to change a little bit up. We're going to have quotes of the day.
Yes. So our quote today is, if you're going to rise, you might as well shine.
I love that.
Okay. So don't settle for mediocre. Find that treatment or therapy that will give you the best result so you can shine.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank my colleague, Dr. Susan Schmidt, for joining me today. And I would like to thank you, our audience, for listening in. And if you have any questions for us at ABHA, please post them on our Facebook page or email us at questions@arizonabalance.com. Again, questions@arizonabalance.com. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe, as we are always looking for different topics and you don't want to miss any future episodes.
Also, for a free copy of Dr. Day's book, Re-Engage with Life and Family, just visit our website at azbalanceandhearing.com. So Arizona's abbreviated, azbalanceandhearing.com, and click the box requesting a free copy. Or you could call our office at 602-265-9000 and request a free copy that way as well. Just let one of our exceptional staff know that you heard it on our podcast today.
Remember, hearing care is health care, and treating your hearing loss is the number one modifiable risk factor for reducing your risk of developing dementia. Treating your hearing loss has also been shown to reduce your risk of falls, decrease the experience of tinnitus, increase your social engagement, and decrease depression. Don't put it off any longer. I'd like to thank Robin, our producer, and Dave Pratt, Star Worldwide Networks, for allowing us to come in today and record. And you, our listeners, we want to thank you for tuning in. ABHA partnering with you to better balance,
better hearing,
better life.
Thank you for listening to the ABHA Listen and Learn podcast with Dr. Dana Day and Dr. Susan Schmidt. Join us next time as we discuss the latest issues related to hearing and balance healthcare. Plus, hear any of our past episodes on demand 24/7 on StarWorldwideNetworks.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.